Pats win tonight?
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I predicted them on game day morning.
Damien Harris to the house!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Bills can't run the ball.
And if it's 55 miles per hour winds.
The kick is lifted to the uprights and the kick.
Missed it!
He missed it off to the right. The wind took effect.
The Rich Eisen Show. Today's guests. Fox Sports college football analyst Joel Klatt. Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert. Plus, Michigan Heisman Trophy finalist Aiden Hutchinson. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Okay, everybody, welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We are live here in Los Angeles, California on NBC Sports on Peacock, NBC Sports Audio, Sirius XM 85. We say hello to our terrestrial radio audience listeners on the Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio outfit coast to coast. We also say hello to those streaming us on Odyssey and those listening to us later on our podcast, Cumulus Podcast Network. And you can get this show on podcast form to listen to it whenever you want, where all podcasts can be acquired. Good to see you, Christopher Brockman. How are you, sir? Good to see you. How are you, Mike Del Tufo? Good to see you over there. Good to see you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well.
How
Rich.
Are you, TJ Johnson? Good to see you over there.
I mean, I hate him right now. I hate him right now is how I feel.
No, you know,
baby. Look, I'm doing great.
As you know, I can't at all do anything but sit back and say attaboy over to him right now.
Yeah.
It's the greatest day of my life.
Look.
It's Larry Bird's birthday. The Pats are the one seed, and all is right with the world.
You can't argue with this.
I mean, I could, but.
No, look. Guys and ladies and gents, wherever you're listening or taking in this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, you know, if you're still tuned in, with each passing week in the NFL this season, with each passing win that the Patriots have, that's seven now in a row, 11th time Bill Belichick has had a seven-game winning streak within a season. Just think about that number. It's insane. It's absurd. With each passing week that the Patriots do whatever is required within that box of the week of the NFL season in the box of the quarter that they're playing in, whether the wind's with them or at that back or whatever box based on the field position and the down and distance that they play in every single snap, the Patriots just compartmentalize everything in a way that many other teams can't. All right. It's not that they won't. They just can't. They don't have the personnel to do it. Maybe they don't have the coaching staff as experienced to do it. And maybe they just don't have the focus as an organization to have the coaching staff and the players to do it. It's just top down. It's a top down situation in the NFL. And the Patriots top down over, you know, a 2-decade period that seemed to be to run out last year. We're the best at it. And everybody thought it's got to be because of the quarterback. And then when the quarterback went elsewhere, those who thought it was the quarterback and not just the coach, and everybody thought it was the quarterback, and those who did believe that got a whole year's worth of excellence from the quarterback in a new spot, and a whole year's worth of hate to just heap on top of the Patriots and Belichick. And that last year was it. Well, I mean, last year you couldn't do it without Brady, so you're not that guy. And through, trust me, I heard it all in my 18 years of being the first host of NFL Network and still being there. I heard it all. The number of times that I would be sitting on every single show on either Total Access or Game Day Morning, year in and year out, and our producers are trying to come up with a new way of asking the question, is it Brady or Belichick? I mean, yeah. I spent 2 decades doing that.
Yeah.
The first 2 Super Bowls the NFL Network was on the air was championships 2 and 3 for Brady and Belichick. We came on the air and there were back-to-back wins by the Patriots and Brady and Belichick that we haven't seen an organization be able to repeat, and Brady has the opportunity to do that this year. And the answer, hearing the question over and over and over and over again, was it was both together, one of the great combinations in the history of this game. And Brady is great, and so is Belichick, together greatness. So Brady had it last year, and now Belichick's proven, yeah, I still got it too. I still got it too. With a rookie quarterback. With a rookie quarterback. And let's give this to Mac Jones. I think he's more rookie of the year shoo-in today than I thought maybe even going into yesterday.
Oh.
I look at a performance like his last night, and you're like, yeah, performance. A lot of this, Rich. A lot of that. A lot of toss. A lot of toss.
Yeah, here, I'll take that.
46 runs for 222 yards the Patriots put up last night.
That's good.
And put down on the Bills last night because the wind was howling.
Whew.
And the Patriots have the run game to lean on. And Damian Harris, before he got hurt, had a huge touchdown run to start the scoring. And then Ramondre Stevenson, TJ Jefferson's favorite coming into the season. You were pounding the table for him during the
I just saw some things.
Preseason. This kid from Oklahoma is a terrific runner. He can not only slash and hit the hole, but he can make some moves to find the hole. And he can be patient to make sure the hole opens. And the offensive line is firing. And Mac Jones just did what was asked of him to do. And he is so damn coachable. He is so damn coachable that to me, that's part of his rookie of the season resume. Is not only does he make the right plays, and we have no idea if he's making the right calls. Sometimes maybe he is giving the audible. Maybe he is making the right moves. We don't know because we don't get to talk to him. We've asked the Patriots for him multiple times and have been told thanks but no thanks.
Yep.
And it kind of warmed my heart professionally to hear that Peyton Manning on his Manning cast said he reached out to the Patriots to talk to Mac Jones because he's talked to every quarterback going into a Manning cast, and he was told no.
Yeah, not just us.
Wow.
Not just us.
He was told, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Yep.
Because they want him focusing, zeroing in on nothing but football. And so he's making throws when it's asked of him. He's handing it off 46 times, and he's already moving on to the next thing, I'm sure. Honestly, part of being a rookie and being successful is receiving coaching and soaking it in and then also sitting out a game when you're asked to hand it off 46 times. And I guarantee you when he comes back from the bye week, he'll just keep going on because it's the next game. It's another game. It's a new opponent. It's the Indianapolis Colts coming off of a bye week. And he'll start getting focused on that because that's the Patriot way, and he is the perfect vessel. Perfect vessel. Unbelievable. He's more rookie of the year as far as I'm concerned today than he was yesterday. And this team is just coming for you. It's coming for you. It's coming for you in a way that you're going to be dissected and diced up all week long by the coaching staff, and it'll be perfectly delivered to the players who will execute the game plan. And they are terrific. They're not unbeatable. Nobody is in the NFL this year. But what they are is a bye week team going into week 14, sitting back one half game in front of the rest of the pack. That's what they are. 9-4. And the Ravens are taking on the Browns at 8-4. And the Chiefs are now 8-4 as well. And the Kansas City Chiefs are, after beating the Denver Broncos, taking on the Vegas Raiders in a pretty damn big football game, I would say. And then the Tennessee Titans, they are coming off their bye week. We're assuming they're going to get their receivers back. They've got a game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're going to win that one, one thinks. So the Patriots won't have a lone spot coming off their bye week, but that's better than being a half game behind. Or like you're the Bills at 7-5. I've been saying this about the Buffalo Bills for 2 years now. And ever since Josh Allen started blossoming in front of our very eyes in a playoff loss to the Houston Texans. Yeah, kids, Houston used to play in the playoffs. almost
Houston
every year.
Had a 24-0 lead on
the
Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs, right? I know.
In the playoffs.
But ever since Josh Allen started putting it together in a way that you thought, okay, Bill's got this pick right, I was always thinking to myself, what happens when he gets a run game? What happens when Josh Allen is going to be in a backfield at a mesh point with a running back who can dominate too? And suddenly you don't know who's got the ball, and that's a problem. Certainly if the quarterback keeps it and he runs it himself, and then there's a play-action game that is going to be potentially lethal. Lethal. And then they add Stephon Diggs, and that becomes terrific. And I'm still waiting for a running game to develop. And a game like last night, when your opponent is running it 46 times for 222 yards, 19 for 60 is not acceptable. It's not acceptable. Then I mean, and then Matt Breida, you're handing the ball off to him and he drops it. I mean, that got put on Josh Allen. Sorry, fantasy Josh Allen folks.
Oh, really? That was an Allen fumble?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, interesting.
That got put on Josh Allen. And so Breida's not the answer. And, you know, Singletary, we're waiting on him to start dominating. And Zach Moss, I don't know what it is. Especially since they've got the offensive coordinator that can dominate when he's in a groove. They don't give him the opportunity. And the number of times I would hear from Bills Mafia, as I'm sure I will once this segment is over, and either you call us at 844-204-RICH or we post this on our Twitter feed or on our YouTube stream, or the guy who's punching the cameras right now is a diehard Bills Mafia guy, and Michael Hoskins gets in my ear. I heard it all the time. Josh Allen is our main runner anyway, and Josh Allen has got a gun for an arm, and sure he is. He's thrown into the teeth of 50-mile-an-hour wind, tight spirals, man.
Yep.
Certainly when the one mistake the Patriots give you because N'Keal Harry just stands back there and watches the ball bounce on the ground. He doesn't run away from it. As a matter of fact, he tries to pick it up and it hits his helmet and makes it a game.
And he hasn't been on punt return all year.
So I understand Allen's got an arm, but you will need a run game. It's going to be necessary. And last night it was necessary. And the Patriots showed you what happens when they've got a run game and a vast playbook with the run game and multiple running backs who's going to jam it down your throat. And that's how you lose football games in December in Western New York, when you've got an opponent that is well coached and an opponent that is rostered well coming for you. And that lends to third down red zone mistakes like Cole Beasley being wide open and your guy doesn't find him.
It puts
so much pressure on you when you don't have a running game. I'm telling you, the Bills need a running game. It would be terrific. Honestly, what if Fred Jackson was on this team right now?
Oh,
I'm serious. Like, I'm just going to give you names of Buffalo Bills who have had running prowess. Like, what if, when was the last running back they, was Willis McGahee like the last running back they drafted? Marshawn Lynch?
Marshawn, Willis
McGahee. CJ Spiller?
CJ Spiller, yeah.
Let's go, man. Like, that's a mate. To me, that's been a major hole in their resume. And now they're in a 7-5 mosh pit, man. Now they're in a 7-5 mosh pit, and can they get out of it? Sure. Problem for them is while the Patriots are sitting on a bye and the Titans have got the Jaguars, right? And the Chiefs have got the Raiders in their house, which is obviously a throw the records out game. Problem is when the Chargers are 7-5 and have the Giants with potentially Jake Fromm in their house, right? Bengals are sitting there at 7-5. You have no idea what Bengals team is going to be showing up against the San Francisco 49ers this week. What a big game that is for both teams coming off of disappointing Week 13 losses. Problem is for the Bills is their next game is at the Bucs.
Yep.
And Tom Brady, who can make the statement in the direction of Bills Mafia that Aaron Rodgers said to those unfortunate corner dwellers in Soldier Field, who were right in front of him as he scored a touchdown. I own you. And Tom's in his own battle for seeding right now. And Tom is ready to take it out. That's a problem for the Bills. Certainly if Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson had their nights and everybody knew they were coming at you, and now here comes Fournette and Brady and Evans and Godwin and Gronk. Look out. Look out. I'd be concerned if I'm a Bills fan that this Super Bowl season is in dire straits right now. I'm not talking about missing the playoffs, which is possible, sitting at 7-6 entering the final four games of the regular season. Entirely possible? Sure. I don't think so. I still believe in Allen, and I still believe in Diggs, and I still believe in this defense. Only gave up 14 points, man. That's it.
Well, they weren't trying to score a lot. What do you mean they only gave up 14?
That's it. Bent, they bent, but they didn't break. Honestly.
But they got their points gifted to them. So,
Chris, I'm sitting here and I see a defense that is a prideful defense that did get gashed last night at home. I'm not concerned about that defense long term. I'm not. I'm concerned about the lack of a run game on their part to balance things out and keep the Patriots guessing.
Teams when like you the go Patriots three and guessing. Out, your defense is on the field 40 minutes.
Well, I thought last night they did a credible job for having no running game in a game with a 50-mile-an-hour win in their face. They had a chance to win that at the end, Chris. They had a chance to win. And interestingly enough, the Patriots, for some reason, and we were texting about this last night. We left you out, TJ. We were texting about this last night. That last series offensively for the Patriots was the worst of the night.
Yeah.
Then they, like, second and 11, that's when they decided to put it up in the air.
Yeah, I didn't like that, but.
Stop the clock, and then they three and outed it back, put their defense back on the field, and the Bills were moving. I thought they were in trouble, the Patriots, last night in that final series.
Yeah, and Bills then, receivers dropped a couple of passes. Obviously, Allen missed some open, you know.
That's right.
Open Beasley was open, but.
So that's what I'm saying, is that the Bills still had a chance to win it. They didn't get blown out at home. They bent, they didn't break. And I would be concerned about what happens when you're in Tampa. You're going to keep the ball away from Brady? You're going to let Josh Allen wing it all over the place? I mean, you're going to have to keep the ball away from some point. You have to keep the ball away from Mahomes. You're going to have to keep the ball away from Mac Jones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because later on in the show, we'll play a soundbite today from Belichick talking about the entire passing game they had installed for this game. That game plan's already installed for the next time they see him because they didn't use it last night. So. Later on in this show, we've got Justin Herbert of the Los Angeles Chargers sitting there at 7-5 with a great shot to go 8-5 with the Giants coming west to SoFi. And it doesn't matter how many transplanted New Yorkers are showing up in SoFi screaming and yelling, I think they still will have a lot of air raid sirens going off in SoFi for the Chargers defense. Also on this program, speaking of top-notch defense, Aiden Hutchinson, University of Michigan Wolverine defensive end, all-time single-season sack record holder, and national championship semifinalist, and Heisman Trophy finalist. That happened when we had gone off the air yesterday, right, Christopher?
Yeah, it happened during countdown last night.
There we go. Aiden Hutchinson will join us on this program, but first up, Joel Klatt will join us to talk about what happened over this weekend and what's to come. Let's take a break. And you at 844-204-RICH on The Rich Eisen Show.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Just another great season on Fox Sports for he and Gus and the rest of that crew. Just, again, those shots of the Ohio State-Michigan game of both teams coming out of the tunnel with the snow falling, right? I mean, that was amazing.
So good.
Amazing. And then he and Gus called the Big Ten championship game this weekend, and he's joining us right now, I believe, from the Hall of Fame ceremonies that are going down in Las Vegas, Nevada, involving college football. Joe Klatt joining us here from Fox Sports back on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Joel?
Good, bud. How are you?
I'm better for talking to you. I'm seriously mad. I mean, like, going into the Michigan-Ohio State game, you know I was nervous as a cat, and yep. And so I didn't want to be part of any of the hype and the pregame stuff. I flipped the game on like 10 minutes before, and they're showing both teams coming out of the tunnel, the snow coming down. I'm thinking to myself, you know, with all due respect to SEC and Pac-12 and other parts of this great football-loving nation, that's what football is. That's college football right there, man.
It was,
right?
So good.
That was it.
I mean, the energy was amazing in the building. I mean, that's, I think, an obvious. But then just the scene, it was epic. I was down on the field before the game,
right?
And I'm standing with a few of the guys, and the snow starts to just like come down softly, and we're all sitting there, and we're just like, this is perfect. This is the perfect scene. Now, I don't think that the Ohio State fans thought that because they got a pass oriented offense, so it's certainly lending itself towards, you know, favoring Michigan with some of that moisture coming down. But having said that, man, the scene and the atmosphere was second to none.
So do you think the College Football Playoff Committee got it right, Joel? What do you think?
Well, they got the best four teams, which is what they're charged to do. As long as they didn't – I think as long as they didn't factor in a potential rematch with Bama and Georgia in the semifinal, then you can't argue with what they did. Alabama's resume is really good. Michigan's resume is really good. And I think that, you know, both of those teams would have been deserving number one teams. The appearance that there was an avoiding of this semifinal of Georgia-Alabama, I don't love that. Now, they said that didn't take place, so I don't want to knock them for something that they're claiming didn't take place. But having said that, I actually think it would have been better to rematch them and just say, like, listen, we're not going to allow you access to a national championship, you know, just because we think you're good, Georgia, and you're better than Cincinnati because you didn't win a conference championship. That's always been my problem with this model, and it's not going to be fixed anytime soon. Maybe in expansion we can do some things with the language that honor and incentivize the conference championship. But until that happens, this is kind of what you're going to get, and it's certainly not something that Michigan fans wanted to see. You didn't want to see Alabama win because you knew that Georgia matchup was coming down the road.
Well, I'll tell you what, Joel. In all honesty, this is house money to me, and I figure, like, if Michigan's going to reach the promised land, which words I never thought I would say into this microphone, truly, I they're going to have to beat the best anyway, and if they're going to have to go through the top two teams of the SEC with due respect to Cincinnati, then so be it. But I didn't get the whole concept of, you know, they don't want to rematch them and being like, so what? So New Year's Eve, folks will be just like, you know what? I'm not interested in Alabama and Georgia. I saw that a month ago. Really? I mean, like, I don't know about that. And in the same way, what, people will be less interested on January 10th because we saw it on December 4th, I don't know. I mean, that's to me is more than just a regional game, even though it is technically a a conference rematch. You know, I mean, it still would be a month apart, right?
The ratings would suggest, and I don't have them right in front of me, but it was not a very well-watched game, if you would say it that way. When Georgia and Alabama played in the national championship a few years ago, when Tua came in off the bench as a freshman.
And I think that,
you know, there are some, me included, that think that if we do get Georgia and Alabama, I don't think that that's great for the sport. I don't think these rematches within conferences, you know, without an expanded playoff are good for the sport, because it's such a narrow window to get included into the playoffs that this purely subjective measure of four best versus four most deserving, I think has hindered the sport's popularity, to be quite honest with you. And it's made it more regional, and it's made fan bases in other parts of the country you know, come up with theories and of bias and such that could be true or not true. And so I think that if we can get away from that, it would be better. Rich, I think that we need to go to a 12-team playoff in college football. I think that we need to have the six best champions across the sport, conference champions. We need to seed them 1 through 6. The four best champions have to win your conference championship, would get a bye. And then the next four best teams would host first-round games. And that's ways that we can incentivize not only being great, but winning your conference championship and giving you a distinct advantage at the kickoff of this playoff. One of the things that you think about is that we played this SEC championship game, and it's basically just for, like, their SEC championship trophy, because Georgia and Alabama get to play on the exact same footing. No one got an advantage over the other in this very narrow playoff and this four-team subjective race that we have now in this beauty pageant. And I think that's what when we're raised as American sports fans to look at who's being incentive, you know, where's the incentive lie in terms of postseason and who's earning the advantage in the postseason, and then we see what happens in college football, I think we all kind of sit there and pause and think to ourselves, well, this isn't right.
Joel Klatt here on the Rich Eisen Show. So do you think the Heisman Committee got that right as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I really appreciate the fact that they looked at their model and adjusted. And what they adjusted on is that now they take the four top vote getters and bring them as finalists every year, rather than sometimes we would have three and sometimes we would have five. And they did it based on how close the vote was. At least now there's this point of demarcation where it's like, listen, if I'm good enough to be one of the top four vote getters in the Heisman Trophy, regardless of how far back I am, because trust me, I guarantee you those guys at 2, 3, and 4 are going to be pretty far back from Bryce Young, you know, I get to go be a Heisman finalist. I get to honor my program and all of those things. So I think that's a really good change that the Heisman has brought to pass over the last couple of years. Having said that, yeah, I think that these were the four guys that I was looking at. Will Anderson probably was close to being right there. The outside linebacker, defensive end for Alabama. He's been phenomenal this year. But Aiden Hutchinson just played so dominant in the biggest environments of the year. You look at his back end of the season and what he was able to do, in particular in that Ohio State game, 3 sacks against the best passing offense in the country. I think that they got it right, guys. I think that this guy is an absolute freak, and that he deserved to be in New York.
What about top pick? First one heard in Vegas. You know, now the eye in the sky has got all the tape, save one game. For evaluators next year in the NFL, and some of these kids might not play one more bowl game because they're not in the college football playoff. So what do you think? Is Aiden Hutchinson first overall? How does that suss out to you right now?
He's definitely going to be in play. Now, there are guys, I think Kayvon Thibodeau may be more physically gifted than Aiden Hutchinson, but he doesn't come close to playing as hard as Hutchinson does on a play-in and play-out basis. Rich, it's amazing how hard this guy plays on every single snap. Runs at him, runs away from him, pass plays, screen plays, it doesn't matter. This dude never stops. It's relentless. It's beautiful to watch. He's also very skilled, and he has a plan. He's strong. He's got all the things that you probably sit there and roll your eyes at for over the, you know, however long, 20 years you've been doing it. he's got the speed, the power, and he can flip his hips and yada, yada, yada. You know what he does? He gets it done, man. He's a football-playing Jesse. And I think that he'll absolutely be in play at that top pick because of it.
Which quarterback do you think gets pushed to the top because there's a need and so on and so forth? First blush right here in early December, Joel.
I'm not sure. I would probably say Matt Corral. He's got, to me, the most physically gifted upside, and I think he would be that guy. But I've got this sneaky, like, suspicion that Kenny Pickett is going to be the fastest riser up boards of the draft season, the quarterback from Pitt. He just reminds me too much of the Mac Jones, Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield has played a lot of football, and then you put on his tape, and you're like, man, he gets it. He's accurate. So I would say just, like, watch out for Kenny Pickett.
Do you think the Heisman committee can remake the trophy for Kenny if he wins it as a fake slide instead of a stiff arm? What do you think? Do you think you can do that?
That would be amazing. And when you actually throw, you know, it's almost like a dead leg, like, fake slide.
That's amazing.
More power to you. It's an amazing move. I would have torn both knees trying to do that.
Where do you stand, though, on the debate that it shouldn't be allowed, though? What do you think? That he utilized that player safety rule to his advantage to dupe the backs into thinking he's sliding and then scored. Where do you stand on that one?
Yeah,
Joel?
I mean, that's a tough one because it's so subjective. I mean, it gets back to almost like the tuck rule. Listen, I think that if there's any, it should be like the fair catch. You know, it's like the hand can barely go up, and they're like, nope, that's a fair catch. They just, like, err on the side of fair catch. And we always say that, like, the ball goes back to the spot where you start to give yourself up. Mm-hmm. Well, if you start to give yourself up, play should be dead, right? If we're going to take the ball back to that point, then that's what they're telling us anyways, right, is that the play is dead at that moment, that when you start to give yourself up. So if there's any inclination that you're going to give yourself up feet first, I think that the play should be dead whether your knee hits the ground or not. That's how I think that we should play it. It should be almost identical to the fair catch.
Joel Klatt here on the Rich Eisen Show. Last one for you, Joel. I'm sure you have an opinion on all this about what's going on with Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly and now Cristobal going from Oregon to Miami. But, you know, the latter doesn't compare to the first two because the first two happened just as the season had ended, right, for those teams. And Notre Dame's season was still very much alive for a national championship. And I had Lincoln Riley on yesterday and asked him if this December 15th signing date is something he'd be willing to or to move. And because that seems to be to be crunching all of these programs and coaches to make decisions that are ugly for kids, and it's bad looks all around. And I'm just wondering why school presidents and those in management and athletic departments don't have a problem with it. Like, that, yeah, let's just keep signing these kids on December 15th and make it a big problem for everybody.
The problem with college football is that there are too many academics involved and not enough businessmen. Okay? Like, because college football just lives in theories. And then it takes 18 committees of 30 people to sit around and debate something, and then someone decides that it's going to happen. And it's the bureaucracy in our sport is the worst part about it. Now, that doesn't answer your question, but it gets at kind of what the root issue is. We decided that we were going to do this early signing day period, which I don't think benefits anybody. In fact, I think it was born out of the coaches' anxiety through the holiday season and bowl season about the impending signing day in February, which is where it was traditionally. I think it was like the first Wednesday in February is where it was traditionally at, and it should go back to that. Because not only are we getting now, because of the structure of the sport, these types of emotional decisions, which leave people spurned and burned and you know, it kind of like sends shockwaves through whole programs like Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly, when it shouldn't be that way. And there should be time to make this decision and to move forward. So I think that the recruiting calendar should absolutely be looked at. But also, you know, Rich, I think that we should adopt more NFL-style rules because they do it right in terms of the league year and the calendar, and when you like, when are there tampering rules in effect, and when are there not? When can you talk to guys, and when can you not? Because college football is the Wild West, and I think that we need some of those guardrails, and they've been so, you know, they've pushed against those guardrails so much, in part because there's no overarching governing body. We don't have a commissioner that looks out for the best part of the sport or the best interest of the sport. All we have is special interests throughout the sport, whether it's conferences or programs or coaches or players themselves, and everybody acts in their own best interest. That's the structure of our sport. Well, that's not going to be good for it long term, in particular with the revenue that we're bringing in and what we're doing from a media standpoint. You know, this is not healthy when you're talking about guys getting paid $100 million to leave 18 to 22-year-olds in the middle of the night. That just is not healthy. So I think that we need to take a look at all of those structure things, take a look at, quote unquote, a league year, what a calendar looks like, when can you talk to people, when can you not, when are there tampering charges, when are there not, and move forward from there.
I agree with you, Joel, but the question is why don't others, like Joe Castiglione in Oklahoma, right? He's as good as they come in his position. He's got to go through a season wondering, is Lincoln Riley talking to USC or somebody else? And he's, you know, of course he's not fine with having his coach being poached, but so do something about it, right? Like then get down and have all other powerful athletic directors sit down and make a move on this front. And then if you're a coach too, like if you're Lincoln Riley, sure, certainly if you're allowed to do it and you can double your salary and get a private jet for your family and pay off mortgages and things like that, you're all in on that sort of thing.
Sure you are.
But you don't want to sit there and answer questions.
He's been vilified for this, and it's like everybody would have done what he did, right? So I hate vilifying him just because of the way it had to happen and the timing in which it had to happen. Right. I'll give you another point about this early signing day that doesn't even have to do with coaches. You know, the college coaches, how many times have you heard them lament the fact that they go through the bowl season or even the playoff and a national championship, and then the coaches, Nick Saban, has said, like, I got players that have to make a decision about the NFL by next week, and we don't give them enough time to make a decision about their NFL future because of when do they have to declare for the draft, right? So that's the timing of all that. And yet they turn around and do that to high school kids. It's like, oh, okay, so now a high school kid has to play a state championship game and turn around and make a college decision that quickly if he hasn't already committed. It just doesn't make any sense. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. And the bureaucracy of college football is in large part one of the things that hinders it the most.
Joel, I really appreciate the time always. Just again, great broadcast, just great. And it really is just somebody who I, as you know, I have an affinity for you, and I love working with you and getting the opportunity to do that. The fact that your voice was actually associated with football joy for me as opposed to the last 7 years has been a wonderful turn of events. I'll be very honest with you, Joel.
It's going to make the draft better, let's hope.
I look forward to that already. But in the meantime, let's talk in short order. Really appreciate
you
the time.
It. All right. Thank you, Rich. I appreciate your time,
That's Joel Klatt, everybody. Right back at you. At Joel Klatt. I follow him on Twitter. You should as well. You know what I mean? Like, Joe Castiglione doesn't want to have to sit here and wonder about his coach being poached. And the coach wants to maybe get a better opportunity if it can come his or her way. I'm imagining it's this way in both, you know, in both men and women. But obviously we're talking college football here. Right? I mean, sit there and have to answer a question about LSU and basically tell media that you've been talking to and you want to be straightforward, I imagine, and just say, yeah, I'm not going to be the LSU coach. What's your problem? I mean, when clearly USC's already reached out to you and fine print is being, you know, put on a paper, crossing T's and dotting I's, and he comes on a show like this one and he's just like, yeah, I mean, the more I heard about the opportunity, what, over a 9-hour period? Really? It's just, it makes no sense. And he's like, right, your high school kids are like, you're just done. Now make a college decision right now, your entire life decision. Go. Why? What's the point? Because coaches didn't want to go through the pressure of having to recruit during bowl season. Okay. So then bowl season is over for 99.9% of you once New Year's Day is over. That's what January is for, I guess. Right? Right? In the same way that NFL coaches, they got to send somebody down to the Senior Bowl while they're getting ready for a championship game. Puts pressure on you, sure, but that's what you have staff for. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It just makes things uglier for everybody. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the show. Your phone calls when we come back here. Hour number two, Justin Herbert of the Chargers. And we've got a fun segment coming up on the top of hour two. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back here in our terrestrial radio audience, and while you were away, we were sitting here on Peacock talking about last night's weather and what's the ideal condition for a football game. My ideal spot for a football game. Okay, this is interesting. I'm saying this because we just had Joel Klatt on, and I'm like, when the snow is coming down and Michigan's in the tunnel in their home blues, and then out comes Ohio State in their road whites and scarlet and gray and all that stuff, and the snow's coming down, I got goosebumps.
Yeah,
like,
that's cool.
Like, this is what college football is all about. But you would prefer to see a football game played in zero weather conditions, and it's just, you know, hat on hat, game plan on game plan, roster against roster.
I prefer the Super Bowl.
Or for a national championship game, a national championship semifinal. Like, removing weather from the equation, which is odd because the entire rest of the football year, weather is absolutely inserted into the equation all the time. And that's the beauty of football. In baseball, it's just like, oh gosh, it's raining, we got to stop playing. Oh god, and you know, and nothing softer in any sport, with all due respect, than a baseball pitcher reaching base and for some reason needing a jacket.
Gotta, you know, keep the arm warm.
It's like you know, growing up remembering in my basement it was cold, my mom needed an Afghan.
Yeah.
You know?
Gotta keep that arm warm.
You know what I mean? Like, you reach base and I need that jacket. You're a pitcher running the bases, you need a jacket. It was just so, it's still stupid. I saw in the World Series this year, I'm like, this is gonna be look at the past coming up soon. You won't see it anymore.
Well, you're not going to see a pitcher so on stupid. Base in a jacket.
So, no, put it all together, though. For football, to me, the best weather conditions, the best place you could play anything is in the state of California, where kickoff is like the Super Bowl, mid-afternoon.
Yep.
Okay. And it's like when you go into a movie theater.
The Rose Bowl.
When you sit down, right, the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Perfect example. Rose Bowl. I grew up seeing a Rose Bowl.
Sunset.
Okay. Oh. Exactly. Where it starts, like you go in a movie theater or you go see a play, the lights are on when you sit, right? And then the lights go down. And that's when the, you know, attention gets paid to the stage and the drama gets heightened.
Yeah.
So a Rose Bowl, a national championship game or a Super Bowl played in California, it starts in the sun and it ends in the dark.
Perfect.
And the sun sets and it's part of the whole day. And that's what, honestly, watching Rose Bowls in my basement in New York City and Staten Island, I'll say it, okay, it's New York City and Staten Island, New York, that, you know, across from three bridges that attach to New Jersey. That I'll give you what you want sometimes, gents. Okay, that it made me want to live in Southern California watching Rose Bowls.
Oh, yeah.
And the first Michigan game I ever watched after, as I Keith told you,
Jackson.
I got in early to Michigan in December of 85. I watched Nebraska and Michigan in a Rose Bowl. And I'm like, oh, God, this is what it's all about.
Playing in his first
last night, it was kind of wild to see how can you adjust. And the Patriots are like, we're going to run it for 222 yards. We're going to run it 46 times. That's what we're going to do. But
if they were to hold a Super Bowl in Buffalo and those were the conditions, it would be awful.
I agree.
I would not.
It would be a shame. It's just like all year long, we're playing our games. It's time to play four quarters to decide a championship. And it's affected by the weather. That's just
and the idea of the Super Bowl.
So then why don't we play all those games? So then why is it fine to affect regular season games with the weather, but not the ultimate?
Because
last night was a huge game. It was potentially for the AFC championship.
And that should have been a home field advantage for the home team. But it wasn't because they only can do one part, you know, that part of their game. It doesn't
got to build their roster better, man.
Exactly. So it's a home field advantage for the regular season and the playoffs. That's why you play those games. That's why you adjust to the elements of your home stadium.
Right.
But in a Super Bowl, for all the marbles, we need to see both teams operating way up here. And so it can only be done in a neutral site from a neutral weather.
Neutral weather, neutral site.
Absolutely.
What do you think, Mr. Central Pennsylvania, over there?
I mean, it's got to be optimal conditions, right? It has to be.
Really?
I think so. It's the only really true
I just
test.
Find it so funny that we talk about, you know, it's we look back, we see the ice bowl, we see the freezer bowl.
A team isn't supposed to have an advantage in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean.
We look back at all those great moments in the history of the NFL.
Yeah,
they have nicknames, but when it comes to the Super Bowl, we don't want any part of it.
But the NFC and AFC championships are played like that, which kind of says, why can't the Super Bowl be played like that?
Why?
Those games are, to me,
they're championship
games.
They're
championship games.
Yes.
Just as important to the teams that are playing in them that almost make the Super Bowl.
They're important to the one seed. So whoever has the home field advantage, that's why they worked all year. That's why they were the best team in the league to get that home field advantage because they built their team around having that advantage in their own stadium.
I mean,
now you get the two best teams in each conference.
The NFL is the only sport
that
removes the championship round to a neutral site.
Yeah.
Only one.
Yeah, well, there's no...
There's only one. Everyone else is just like, you've got the best record in the regular season. You get the extra game if there's a seventh.
Yeah, you know? There is one. You get one shot.
Unless you're Tampa Bay.
Yeah. One shot at the Super Bowl. So you want to give everybody the most optimal conditions.
It's not a seven-week series, Super Bowl series.
Interesting chat.
It could be cool.
So in our next segment, it's yesterday was the anniversary of Dumb and Dumber being released in the theaters.
Love it.
And it got us to thinking, you know, we're going to take a look at some playoff teams that are currently sniffing it or deeply in the sniffing it hole. I shouldn't say those words, but that's, I think you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
To see if they've got a chance. We're going to say if they've got a chance. And the first playoff clinching scenarios have been released by the National Football League. Ooh, yeah. Three teams can clinch playoff spots in week 14,
woo-hoo,
two of them to print home playoff tickets. And it's very, very feasible that these teams can do it. That's coming up with Justin Herbert in the next hour.